Aloha, Rick Sengaria of Vermont Edition. This podcast has been edited for brevity, so enjoy. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Mitch Wertlieb in for Jane Lindholm. At the risk of angering fans of George Orwell, I'm going to take some liberties with the famous line from his book Animal Farm to say that really serious bicycle riders tend to look at the transportation world this way. Two wheels good, four wheels bad. Now, that's not to say that all bicycle enthusiasts shun the traditional automobile. Most depend on both to get around. But for really avid cyclists, the American love affair with motorized vehicles comes at the expense of a non-polluting mode of transportation that also provides great cardiovascular exercise and a fun, exciting way to enjoy the great outdoors. And with summer almost here, the window of great weather to enjoy bike riding of all kinds is wide open. So we've gathered some guests who can answer all your questions about the best ways to enjoy cycling safely in the Green Mountains. With me in our VPR studios in Colchester is Peter Burns, a resident of Winooski, who rides his bike not just in summer, spring, and fall, but year-round, and he's done that for decades. He also teaches workshops on recreational, commuter, and winter biking. Peter, thank you so much for being here today.
It's my pleasure.
And joining us on the line is Ross Saxton. He's the business partnerships manager at Local Motion. That's a nonprofit that advocates for biking and other forms of active transportation. He works with businesses and communities to improve biking opportunities in Vermont and has also raced bikes both semi-professionally and with UVM's cycling team. Ross Saxton, thank you for joining us today as well.
Hello, thanks for having me.
So, Peter Burns, let me start with you because you're that guy. You're that guy. Every winter, I'm driving around Vermont, and I see at least one person bundled up, head to toe, sleeting, it's snowing, or both, and you're out there on a bike and just exposed to the elements. And I have to ask, was this a conscious decision that you made to go all bike all the time?
Yeah, I've been riding all winter long for 30 years or so. When we first began, there were maybe a handful of people. I'd see one or two other riders in the winter. We were a unique breed at that time. But over the years, it's changed. The technology has improved. And along with the technology, consciousness has improved. People say, oh, I can do it. It's doable. And there may be people who are 100% hardcore all the time. I don't ride in fresh, deep snow. That's the only thing that my bike is not good for. I teach Ross is my boss at Local Motion, and I do teach winter bike riding, so I have to ride the ride, as it were. 18 below was the coldest this winter, but it is a relatively short commute from my home in Winooski to Burlington.
What about this, though? What do you do when you have to go grocery shopping? How do you get stuff back?
Well, there's one of the things that's wonderful about Vermont, Chittenden County, and Burlington, Winooski in particular, is I use car share. So if I have a big load, if I have to do something, I'm a member of car share. I rent a car for an hour or two, do the things that need to be done. That said, there are cargo bikes, and Local Motion does have cargo bikes you can use that will haul almost anything that you really want to do on a bike, but sometimes it's simpler to use a car.
And you had a car at one point, is that right?
I did have a car. Last year, I decided to give up the car. I was already doing 90% of my transportation by walking, taking the bus, and car share. So I felt like, why not give it to the charity for cars?
And you haven't looked back since?
I haven't looked back. Getting rid of the car was like taking a heavy weight off my shoulders. Cars are so expensive, and there's repairs, and it was a wonderful feeling. And I will say, though, that I depend on the infrastructure of Burlington Winooski to make that possible. It would be harder if I lived, say, in Newport.
Ross Saxton, let me turn to you. For someone who maybe has not ridden a bike in years or just wants to get started, what would you recommend as, where to go for road conditions that might be more forgiving for novice riders?
We've got a lot of rail trails and bike paths here in Vermont, so we're pretty lucky for that. looking north, we've got Lamoille Valley Rail Trail, we've got the Missisquoi Valley Rail Trail. You know, Burlington's got the bike path, which is a part of the Island Line, which goes all the way up into South Hero. You can take the causeway to get up there. So starting on a path like that where there are no vehicles that you need to contend with is a great place to start. It's nice and safe, and you can take your family. You can go your own speed and make your own adventure out of it.
Yeah, smooth going on those roads. I understand that there are some repairs ongoing for the popular Colchester Causeway and the bike ferry, which was shut down for a while. Those were damaged in recent storms. Can you give us any update on how those fixes are going?
Yeah, that's pretty exciting news. The state just stepped in, our heroes with V-Trans, working with Town of Colchester and Fish and Wildlife. They own the northern section of the causeway. So there's plans now to get this causeway back up and running by early July, which means that we can run our bike ferry, which we weren't sure if we're going to be able to do this year because of that damage. But as soon as the causeway opens, we're going to get ready to go with daily bike ferry service again. And last year we had about 16,000 people from all over the world come and use that. So we're pretty excited to have that running.
Oh, that's great to hear. That's going to be back up and going. Go ahead,
Peter. I want to mention one thing. I'm a big fan of that bike ferry, and I started an informal club called the First and Last Club, where I take the very first ferry in the spring and the very last one in October. So if anybody wants to join me on the first one in July, it'll be a little later this year, but the last one in Columbus Day, you are an informal member of an elite club.
Wow, what a great idea to join Peter Burns for that. Peter, one of the things that has kept me from biking as much as I would like to is the sort of overwhelming choices, maybe, that, you know, when it comes to the type of bike to choose, what kind of gear I might need. I mean, as I understand it, though, you're pretty much in the school of thought that you shouldn't obsess too much over that stuff. Is that right?
Yes. I try not to obsess about it too much myself. what I would suggest is we're lucky again. We have some great bike shops around here. You go to any of those bike shops. I know Old Spokes has used bikes. Others, mostly new bikes. You go and you say, this is the kind of bike riding I'd like to do. This is my budget. What do you suggest? And they're not going to try and upsell you. They're not going to try and give you more bike than you need. The bike mechanics and salespeople are really knowledgeable, really friendly, really love biking. So I would start with that and try, you know, and then go from there.
You've been biking for decades, as we've talked about, and I imagine that back in the day you rode around without a helmet, but you do use one now, I'm guessing.
I do use one. I started wearing a helmet as soon as I started riding 30 years ago. I didn't ride a helmet when I was a kid, when we used to ride down the hill in front of my house with standing on the seat, holding onto the handlebars and going around a sharp curve without looking for traffic. I sometimes think it's a miracle that many children who ride bikes are, you know, adults now.
I thought I was going to be the cool one to talk about how I didn't wear a helmet when I was a kid either, but I was not one of those kids who was standing on the seat.
No.
You've been a daredevil for quite a while.
Well, you know, I've tried to calm that down. I will say that, you know, there's a whole thing about children playing outside, children being allowed to play outside, and the resilience that, you know, getting scratched up, falling off a bike. You know, I feel like I have some – I'm 62 now. I feel like I have some resilience by having lived that kind of a life. I'm not an adventurous person per se. I don't like taking risks. But, you know, I've fallen off my bike a few times and I've bounced back up. And I think there's some resilience in being outside in the weather, facing the environment.
You know, my daughter's pediatrician would agree with you. She says she likes to see some bruises and cuts on kids because it means they've been outside. They've been playing. They've been getting their exercise. We've got a call right now. Mike is on the line from Colchester. Hi, Mike.
Hello.
Hi, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Thank you.
You have a question for our guests?
I do, and it's one that perplexes me, especially when I'm in traffic. Are bicyclists to be considered pedestrians or vehicles subject to the laws of the road when we're sharing the same space?
Thank you for that call, Mike. Ross Saxton, do you want to tackle that one?
Sure, yeah, and I think Peter's got some good things to say after this. He recently wrote a really nice blog post on the Local Motion website that just kind of describes how cyclists are somewhat in between a motorist driving a car or someone walking on the sidewalk. And it's true. I mean, we're kind of stuck in this gray area where we're moving quickly, especially now with e-bikes. We're going just as fast as a car is, but we're not a car. So, to answer that question directly, though, bicyclists, we do have laws that we need to abide by to be safe. Sometimes we need to bend them just a little bit to stay safe, but we do have a responsibility, just as a motorist has a responsibility to follow the rules of the road, so do cyclists. So we're not pedestrians, we're not cars, we're on bikes. So we just need to make sure that motorists are respectful of bikes, bikes are respectful of the motorists, and when we both have respect for each other, that's when it works well.
It's frustrating when you see bikes riders do crazy things. I understand that. You know, things that scare you as a driver, going on down the runway street the wrong way. One of the answers to that, I think, is for us all to advocate for good bike infrastructure. Because in countries like Holland and Denmark and Germany, where there is a really good bike infrastructure, biking is just something everybody does, and you just obey the law as you would in a car. It's not something that, you know, that you question. The problem is that because there are places like on Route 15 on the way here, where bicyclists, there's just no room for us. We can go the back way. We can go through St. Michael's College and then back by the National Guard station and, you know, do things alternatively. But until the infrastructure is there and there are bike lanes that are safe, there are going to be bicyclists who don't obey the law as they should.
We got this listener email. Someone wrote in and said, if I could humbly make a plea for a frank review of etiquette and Vermont law on how both riders and motorists are to use the roads and share the space, it might help reduce conflict and potentially reduce injury or even fatality. Ross Saxton, how would you describe sort of the relationship between motorists and bicyclists in Vermont? Is it antagonistic? Is it fairly friendly?
I think most people are pretty friendly. Yeah, I mean, a lot of us who ride a lot have stories. I was thinking about it earlier. I actually don't have a story where a bottle or something was thrown at me, but I know a lot of people. Maybe Peter has a story. But for the most part, I think people are pretty respectful of one another when someone's driving or someone's riding a bike. Sometimes you do run into someone who's maybe just having a bad day and they're looking for an outlet to take their anger out on, which happens, and maybe it's an unfortunate cyclist who's on the road. But for the most part, I think a lot of people who are driving cars ride bikes, and a lot of people who ride bikes drive a car. So everyone has both perspectives. But for the folks who do drive a car but don't ride a bike, for the most part, they recognize it's a person, the human being on that bike. So
right.
You have to be respectful of that human being.
Peter, I hope you don't have a story about having a bottle thrown at you. Anything like that happen to you on the road?
Well, of course. One of my most... I mean, one of them had kind of a funny element to it. I stopped my bicycle, and I was I have a bright yellow bicycle, and I was wearing a reflective vest, and it was broad daylight, and a woman drove her car onto my left foot.
Ooh.
And stopped there.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's kind of funny,
no,
as I said. And I screamed back up, and luckily she backed up, because if she had panicked and gone forward, that would have been messy, because I was falling in front of her car.
Oh, gosh.
And then she got out and she said, you know, the classic line, I didn't see you.
Right.
Which is, from my perspective.
Again,
sometimes,
bright yellow bike, reflective vest.
Right.
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff. She was so upset that as we waited for the ambulance, I found myself in the funny position of having to comfort somebody who had just run over my foot. I said, it's all right. You know, I understand. You just have to be more careful. But I was lucky. I dodged a bullet. No broken bones. I was back riding within a couple of days. But, I don't want to be a fear mongerer. I want to say, everything that's worth doing carries some risk. Mm-hmm. And if we were afraid rationally, then since heart disease is one of the great killers, we'd be scared of cheeseburgers, for example. I mean, we'd be terrified of things that rationally could kill us. Riding on the road is some risk, but so is getting into your car. And for me, the risk is absolutely worth it.
I'm so glad you said you don't want to do the fear-mongering thing. I do have to bring up one more thing, though, because your story made me aware of this. And this is something I've actually seen happen. And it's just – it's terrifying for the person on the bike and the person in the car. But what do you do about incidents where someone's riding their bike fairly quickly, they're obeying the laws, but – someone opens their passenger car door, you know, and that at exactly the right moment when that person hits that car door. And I've seen somebody go tumbling over the handlebars onto the road. It's awful. And I think this happens more often than people realize.
What's great, this is, again, a cultural change and hopefully would come into place when more and more people ride. But in countries like Denmark and Holland, drivers are taught to open the car door with their right hand so that they automatically look behind them as they are opening their car door. One of those little life hacks or one of those, little things that actually can save somebody's life, can make a difference. And it's just the habit. And, I like to teach kids who are learning how to drive, driver's ed. Right. And, that's one of the things I say, you make a habit of doing that, you'll avoid that kind of craziness.
What a great idea. Dave is on the line from Brattleboro. Hi, Dave.
Cohen and Ross, hi.
Great. Great to be with you, Dave. What's your question?
Well, I just wanted to mention something about V-Bike, and we work with Locomotion, and one of the most important things that we're working on is rebooting the bike in Vermont and bringing the electric assist options, the cargo bikes, and even things like the Elf and Pebble. There's a vehicle called the Elf. There's another one called the Pebble that are kind of like almost like bike cars that have electric assist, a solar panel, roofs, a covering, lighting options, and all kinds of things like that. We can carry our kids. We can carry the cargo. We can ride year-round. The ESS, provides a modicum of safety where there isn't, the kind of bike infrastructure that's needed. And V-Bike offers free consultations for Vermonters through V-Trans to help them to find the kind of, electric assist or cargo bike that they need. And we've been working with Locomotion. We've got a fleet of bikes and also subsidies for people to purchase electric bikes in the Burlington area, which Ross and I really want to work on, like a statewide subsidy to really raise up the bar, the level of how many people are on their bikes riding as much as possible. It's just a great thing for Vermont, and it's really just so Vermont for people to be out there.
Hey, Dave, help me out here a little bit, just briefly, because we're going to go to a break in a minute, but I'm a little curious about V-Bikes. So you're talking about an electronic bike here, but it's not fully electronic. In other words, you have the option to pedal or to have the electric assist?
Right. And most electric bikes or e-bikes have different levels of assist that you can choose as you're riding to assist you. Sometimes we'll have a throttle, which is very useful for a cargo bike. But the whole idea is for you to pedal and offer as much, of your human power to it as possible. And it's the ultimate hybrid. There's the idea of a hybrid car compared to a bicycle, electric bicycle, which is the ultimate hybrid, is there's no comparison at all in terms of efficiency and certainly our connection to the world.
Dave, thanks very much for that call. Peter Burns, before we go to the break here, I want to ask quickly, tell me the truth here. Be honest. When you, as an avid cyclist, hear about something like the V-bike, do you say, that's cheating? I do those big hills. I do it under my own incredible calf muscle power,
It's funny you should mention my massive calves. But
you guys can't see our friend Peter Burns here, but he is in great shape. Yeah. Let me tell you that, and you would expect so. But go ahead.
I think that they're great. There's some questions about electric assist bikes on bike paths and also on mountain bike trails. Those are yet to be completely ironed out. But if anything that will get people on bikes is for me positive. The purest in me is that I won't put a bicycle on a car to go for a bike ride.
You won't do that.
No, I stopped doing that even when I had a car. If I want to – in Vermont, there's two options that I think are great. You get out of your doorway and you ride, or you put your bike on a bus. I had a beautiful ride from Vergennes. I took my bike onto the bus to Vergennes and rode back last Thursday. Gorgeous.
So I want to ask both of you about some simple tips that you would recommend for bikers preparing to go out on a road where they know traffic will be a concern. Peter, you mentioned about having bright clothing. The reflective clothing is important. Ross Saxton, what would you say for somebody who's just ready to get out there maybe for the first time, knowing they're going to be dealing with a little bit of traffic?
Yeah, well, making sure that your bike is in good shape is really important. You might not kind of think about it consciously, but subconsciously, if you're not quite sure if your bike is working real well, you might not be as confident and might not have as much fun as you otherwise. And that's really what riding a bike is about, I think, is just having a lot of fun. So knowing that you're prepared, knowing that your bike functions well, maybe knowing how to fix a flat, which in the workshops that Peter's does, we do workshops all around the state, and they're free. So you can even request that we'll set up a workshop for you. So definitely let us know. So knowing how to fix a flat or fix your chain, things like that, or we'll just make your ride a lot more enjoyable. But being conscious of what's around you, knowing that there's a car behind you, say you come up some pebbles in the road or something, and you want to not dart into the road. You want to make sure that there's no cars coming behind you. I use running lights all the time, so a nice bright light in the back, one in the front, even during the day. It can get a little shady on some of the hills around Vermont, even on a sunny day. So having those blinking away is definitely a good idea.
I don't know why this thought just leapt into my mind, but what do you think about bicycles built for two? Do people even ride those anymore?
Oh, yeah, my wife and I go out on them. They're super fun. They're a great time.
Good to know. Okay.
Yeah, they're great. Takes a little bit of coordination. Makes your marriage a little stronger, perhaps, by the end.
or weaker, right?
I was thinking the same thing.
And who gets to ride in front? Interesting issues to hatch out.
We'll let folks work that one out on their own. Now we're going to hear from Kim Jackson, and she is with Vermont Adaptive Ski and Sports. That's a nonprofit that's offered adaptive road cycling now for about 20 years. Kim Jackson, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for including us in the conversation. This is great.
Oh, absolutely. It's really fun to talk about cycling. And first, let our listeners know, what does Vermont Adaptive Ski and Sports provide for riders with disabilities?
So we have, like you said, been doing road cycling for about 20 years, plus or minus. And I laughed when Ross just said about the bicycle built for two, because we use tandems all the time with our visually impaired folks who, either have a visual impairment or a blind, where the guide or the captain would be in front and then the athlete would be in the back. So we have a variety of different bikes depending on a person's disability. It could be a tandem, it could be a trike, it could be a traditional bike. And then we get into our mountain bikes and our off-road hand cycling. It varies depending on the disability.
And the mountain biking, is that fairly new?
Well, we started that about 3 years ago. We're one of the first adaptive mountain bike programs here in New England and the only one in the state. And again, mountain biking, I think everybody knows, is just booming in the state as it is at the resorts, on off-road trails. So we have a variety of options for that, too. We do mostly off-road hand cycling on trails like Sunny Hollow Trails up in Colchester or down here in Rutland at Pine Hill Park, but a very variety of places across the state. And then we do some downhill, but the downhill mountain biking is really for that upper-end athlete who is just, likes the soar of the downhill, will take the chairlift up and really needs to have some experience to do that.
Now, for people who may not be familiar with these adaptive bikes, what are they like? I mean, can you give us a sense of how they're used, how they work, what they look like?
Yep. Well, I mean, we use a lot of traditional two-wheel bikes, depending, again, on the disability. And then if somebody has a spinal cord injury, they might be using a hand cycle where you'd be sitting and using your hands to make the wheels go. Same with the downhill mountain bikes that we have. We have adaptive bikes that do the same, but they're actually on four wheels, and you're leaning into it more in your chest and using your hands, again, almost going head first, using your hands to pedal. And then a trike, you know, a tricycle, three wheels, gives a little bit more balance. The tandem bikes, obviously, for somebody that might have that visual impairment or balance, motor skill, coordination. It really depends on the disability, but there are a variety of bikes to be used.
I do have to imagine that these bikes could be pretty expensive to own, at least. Is that the case?
They are. You know, as in any piece of adaptive equipment, whether it's a monoski, a mountain bike, you know, they can be thousands and thousands of dollars. We do have a fleet of bikes, both traditional and adaptive bikes. So when folks come to our programs, if they have their own equipment, they have their own bike, they can bring it with them. And we also supply equipment depending on what their needs are.
And Kim, what's it like, especially for kids that have a disability, that get onto one of these bikes for the first time and realize that they start to get that joy of motion? I mean, what kind of a reaction have you seen?
Well, you know, Peter said it at the top of the show. He said, oh, I can do it. It's doable. And I think that's probably one of the reactions, you know. It makes the playing field so level for kids. What do kids do? They love to go bike riding.
Mm-hmm.
So despite a disability, you can get out there with your friends and have a great time and be outside and enjoy, you know, what our playground is here in Vermont. And it's just a feeling, I'm sure, like anybody trying something for the first time, it's an accomplishment. And you did something, and you get to do it with your friends.
That's wonderful. And you say you're in Rutland, but is Vermont Adaptive Ski and Sports, do you have places sort of around the state where folks can find out about these things?
Yep. We're actually, our programming is year-round, and it is statewide. So our state headquarters is located at Pico Mountain. And our southern programs, we do a lot in Castleton and the Rutland area, the Killington area. And then we're also based out of Waterbury and Warren, Waitsfield. We do a lot at the Blueberry Lake Trails in Warren. And then we're on the waterfront up in Burlington and in Chittenden County. We actually partner with Local Motion and do a lot with them on the Burlington Bike Path. And then, you know, the Stowe Bike Path is there. There's, as been said before, there's so many different options here in the state to be able to bike.
That's great. Kim Jackson with Vermont Adaptive Ski and Sports. Thanks so much for being with us today. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
You bet. I want to ask Ross Saxton about, you know, we just heard Kim talking about the joys of adaptive bike riding, and there are so many different kinds of bike riding, it seems. You know, you talked about some of the traditional ways of getting out on a bike path, what have you, and there's something for folks who like to do gravel grinding. Am I getting that right? Is that an actual thing?
Yeah, exactly. It's basically just getting on any bike and going on our dirt roads, of which we have plenty around here. I think that's one of the most fun ways to go on an adventure on a bike. You know, maybe sometimes don't even look at a map, just kind of jump on some dirt roads and start cruising around. And that's, you know, it's a good spot to make sure you know how to change a flat, just in case, you know, there's stones and whatnot. But
right, yeah.
Bikes now that are designed specifically, they're called gravel grinders. They're basically like road bikes with a little bit knobby tires, and you can just go cruising on these dirt roads that don't have a lot of cars, beautiful views, you know, go past your neighbor farmers, and it's just so much fun.
That sounds great. Now, I don't know if either of you are beer drinkers, and I know that sounds like a non sequitur, but we do have this question from Joseph in Montreal who asks, I am a daily commuter plus weekend rider in Montreal. Can you recommend any beer and bike tour itineraries in Vermont? Or should I just map it out myself? You guys know about any of this? Peter? I'm sorry, Ross.
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
I have a couple buddies who actually did this last year where they got on their bikes. They loaded up, you know, with some lightweight camping gear. They did a tour around the state. They got the beer passport,
uh-huh.
And they stopped at the different breweries around the state and just rode between them. So I think it's a great opportunity to get creative, find the roads you want to go on. If you want to go gravel grinding, great, you can definitely do that. If you want to stay on pavement, you can do that and just connect however many you want. You know, maybe need to give yourself a little bit of time after tasting.
Yeah, I mean, I that's kind of the obvious question I had to ask there. I mean, I get it. It sounds like fun,
right.
But you do want to sort of temper your intake.
And there's no reason not to stop with beer. For instance, you could do high-end coffee tour of Vermont. You could do an ice cream and creamy tour of Vermont. You know, there's all kinds of themed ways to explore Vermont. Covered bridges is another nice thing to look for. Anything that gets you out there is worth following up on.
We've got Heather on the line from Middlebury. Hi, Heather. You're on Vermont Edition.
Hi.
Hi.
Are you guys? Can you hear me?
Yep, we're with you.
So I've been an avid bike rider. I've bike raced for about 5 years. I've had more than one concussion, and one of them was caused by somebody in the wrong lane and coming at me and me slamming on the brakes and crashing. And one of them is I had headaches and sleep problems for up to 4 months. And so I was just hoping that there could be more done for bike safety, more bike paths put up around the state and the nation, and also that people would talk about safety more and encourage people to wear helmets more. And I'm just wondering, maybe there's some stuff. I'm sometimes scared to ride my bike, honestly, mostly on the roads. I don't ride on the roads anymore so much.
I'm sorry that happened to you, Heather. It does sound like a scary incident there. Peter, what would you recommend as far as, you know, folks like Heather who may have had an accident and you know, are a little gun shy of getting back out there now?
Yes, it's really scary. We were talking earlier about gravel grinders, and you have to decide where you feel comfortable riding. I think it would be a tragedy for anyone to give up bike riding because they're afraid, and I'm not saying the fear isn't well founded, but there are often dirt roads where there's very few cars. Things can happen on dirt roads too, but I mean, there's less risk. Even here in Chittenden County, which is the most urban part of the state, I can ride for 15 minutes and I'm on a dirt road. So finding places where you feel comfortable ride are good. And I feel strongly that I want to be on the roads too, because if we're not there, if we're too frightened to ride, then car drivers start believing that we belong on sidewalks, which I don't believe is true.
Yeah, that sounds like it would be a little too difficult to do. I'm going to give you the last word, Ross Saxton. As far as the future of biking in Vermont, do you think that it's bright, that it's going to continue to improve, and can we get some state help maybe to make some of the bike lanes more accessible?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the trends, more and more people are riding than ever before, especially just if you look over the last 10 years. So, I mean, you know, more bikes on the road. I like to point out when motorists get a little upset about putting in bike lanes or taking a few parking spots away, you know, especially in more of our downtowns like Burlington or Rutland or Brattleboro, when you get a little bit of traffic, that bike infrastructure means there's fewer people who are going to be in their cars, and there's going to be more people on bikes. So that means less traffic, which is pretty exciting for me and everyone else who likes spending time in the car. But if you look at the infrastructure piece of bike lanes and, you know, protected bike lanes, just marking where the lanes are, everything like that, it's coming. The city has made a commitment to improve all of that. There's a pretty progressive plan to make that happen. It's going to make it less stressful for the people in cars. It's going to make it more fun and safer for people on bikes. And it's not just in Burlington. It's happening all across the state, which is really exciting. V-Trans recently made
it. We're losing you a bit there on the line, Ross, but thank you very much for letting us know about that. We did get this email from Christopher, who said the inconsistency of how people bike is a problem. They're often on the wrong side of the road, the sidewalk, ignoring rules of the road, like running stop signs, red lights, weaving in and out of traffic. I think, Peter, this is something you were talking about before, where bicyclists have to have their own responsibility as well. Just a few seconds left here, Peter. Are you going to ever go back? I mean, are you just committed to the bike in all seasons?
Absolutely. There's no question. I will ride until I die, hopefully not on the bike itself.
We certainly hope not either. And I will be looking for you on the roads this winter, and I will give you a wide berth.
One last thing.
Yes, quickly.
Vermont Public Radio needs a bike rack in front of their studio. I didn't see one.
Okay, we're going to get right on that. Thank you very much. Our guests today have been Peter Burns of Winooski, Ross Saxton, Business Partnership Manager at Local Motion, and Kim Jackson with Vermont Adaptive Ski and Sports. Thank you guys so much. This has been a lot of fun.